My name is Lasha Senyuk, and tonight's topic is Kevin Smith. Kevin, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Good to know, good to know. We last were talking about the fact that Kevin doesn't dream, or he used to dream, mm-hmm. but for some reason or other he stopped dreaming at night. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I don't know when it happened.
Okay.
It's been several years ago, and I just one day the thought came to me, you know, it's been a long time since I've had a dream. And I had not noticed it. And so I don't know, I guess probably for maybe the last 12 to 15 years.
Really?
Yeah, I just don't dream.
Well, I wonder if you do, but you're just not... I think sometimes when people dream, they go into the dream plane and they're doing deep spiritual learning at times. And I think that might be, I don't know, but part of what you may be going through.
I doubt it.
Okay.
Because I don't see any results or effect of that. But, you know my schedule. I work 20 hours a day.
It's blistering.
Yeah. And so when it's time for me to go to sleep, bang, I'm gone. And I get 4 hours, and I'm absolutely hard rock dead.
Wow.
But at the end of that 4 hours, even without an alarm, bang, I'm up, I'm awake, I'm alert, and I'm ready to go. And it's like instead of, you know, I remember that I would go to sleep, and it's like you kind of drift down
mm-hmm.
into sleep. I don't. I dive into the deep end. Bam, I'm there.
Really?
Yeah. And
I wonder
if
that's just a function of that you're so busy and that you just have that specific amount of time and that's it.
It could
be.
Your
body just knows that's when it gets rest.
Yeah, it could be. And, I don't see any effect or any result of having dreamed anything. And I remember what that was like.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Well, have you noticed any sense of added stress because you're not dreaming? Because I know dreams mm-hmm. tend to help us relieve stress sometimes.
No, I don't. And actually, for me, dreams kind of interrupted sleep. Now, some people really enjoy... I had some great dreams. You know, I dreams of flying, dreams of being in wonderful places and... you know, around the world and all of that. And, it was great, but, you know, it interrupted sleep.
Kevin, are you telling me you're too busy to dream?
Yeah, and I'm too busy to die right now.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. So you're becoming a musician.
No, I've been one.
You've been one?
Yeah, I was a professional musician from the age of 17. I played trombone. I was a studio musician. I was under contract with a company that produced movies for Disney.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't work in their movie projects. They did television shows as well for kids. And so I worked on those projects. And I did that from the time I was 17 till I was 23. I was a studio musician. It was a few days before I turned 23. I walked out of the studio like 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning. And I'd been doing this every night since I was 17. And I kind of looked around and I said, you know, I just don't want to do this anymore. And so I had 2 custom-built horns, and I sold them the next day, and I got out of the music business. And I only played trombone one more time after that. I was in Spain, and I was invited to play trombone for an American that was over there doing concerts. So I went to a pawn shop in Spain and bought a cheap trombone and went and played. And then I gave it to a kid that came to that concert, and he was really impressed with a trombone. He had never seen one before. And they came backstage, and the grandfather was with him, and you know, he just wanted to meet me and would I show it to him and all that. And I asked him, if you had one, would you play it? He said, sure. I said, here you go. So,
wow.
I don't know. He was about 10, I guess.
What made you decide it? Did you decide at that point to become a police officer, or what made you decide to become a cop?
You know, I did a lot of things. At one point, I owned, I was the youngest person ever to, in Texas ever to get a license to own a private employment agency. And I was 21 when that happened. And so I did that, but I was still playing music. And then I moved from there. I sold that. I opened a special delivery company. Hotshot delivery company. You know, you have something you want delivered, and you want it delivered to that person right now.
A courier service.
Yeah, and we pick yours up and deliver it where it's going before we pick the next one up. Okay, so it's not just courier; it's hotshot, fast.
Wow.
And so I started that with I had $23, I think. I was really down. I started that with $23, and then I sold that. And it's still going. And then I owned an insurance agency. I became an insurance agent. And
Wait a minute. Are you telling me you used to sell insurance?
Yeah.
Oh, you're breaking my heart.
Yeah. I sold big stuff, you know, financial planning stuff.
Oh, okay.
And my agency was number two in the nation with that particular company, which is one of the largest in the country. And we were number two in the nation. And my partner in this was, he was a preacher. But he was Church of Christ. And they believe you can be saved and then you can be lost again. And somebody asked me, didn't it bother me to have a preacher as my partner? And I said, no, we get along great, and he's really good at this, you know. Yeah, but he's a preacher. I said, yeah, but he's the kind that believes if he cheats me, he'll go to hell, so I'm safe. So,
well, it seems to me sometimes a preacher and an insurance agent are selling the same things.
Well, sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, but it was a good arrangement, and then you may remember the collapse of all the savings and loans here in the United States. Well, that took out a lot of the products that we were able to sell. And so I just decided, you know, I'm tired of this too. I think I'll be a cop. So that's how it started.
Kevin, I'm impressed. I'm impressed that you reinvent yourself every so often. I think that's marvelous. People should do that all the time. You know, they get stuck in these patterns, they get stuck in this way of thinking of themselves. And, you know, I'm the same way. You know, I reinvent myself sometimes. You know, mm-hmm. I'm always becoming one thing or another. You know, I'm never just one thing. And I think that's the best way to learn more about life.
Well, you know, there are people who can stick with the same thing for 40 years, 50 years, and I admire them.
Mm-hmm.
My dad was able to do that. But, you know, I learned his secret of it. His secret was that job that he was sticking with, that was just money.
Mm-hmm.
And his interests were wide, varied, and deep as well. And he was a reader. He was a thinker. And, you know, his job was not his life. It's so he could afford his life.
Wow. That's rare nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, I think they've got us so scrambling to make ends meet. And the world is so different nowadays that we forget to learn, we forget to study, we forget to understand what's going on around us. We're just so pushed into this little box of you have to be this, you have to earn that, mm-hmm. you have to do this in your life. It's difficult.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've gotten to a place in our society where most people identify themselves by their job.
Yeah.
You know, like somebody might say, well, oh, so you're a talk show host. No, I'm not. I'm a man. A talk show host is what I do.
Right.
Playing guitar is what I do, you know. But I am a person, and my possibilities are absolutely infinite.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the best way to approach things. Do you know, Kevin, I feel like we've gotten to know you a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
We've put some of the fill in.
Okay.
Around some of your activities in life, and I think that's good.
Mm-hmm.
I also wanted to talk about some of the stuff that you said on the show the other night.
Okay.
You were first of all, you showed a video of a man running to a tank.
Mm-hmm.
That he was actually invisible until he reached the tank and then climbed on board of it. And I thought this was just fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you were really hit with technological things, so I don't know that people could phone in and talk about it all that much.
It was hard.
Oh, man, it was brutal.
Yeah, when I opened up Skype, you got through and nobody else ever did.
Really?
Right.
They were hitting Skype, too.
Yeah.
That's hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as I was mentioning on the show, because I've been mystically trained, I can sort of stalk or track some of the energy that was going on there.
Yeah.
And I felt a very strong sense. I tracked it over to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And this big building that had it was like a big golf ball. And the people were underneath it, though. And it was over in Europe. And I think that's where it originated from.
Well, I can tell you that what we've been able to trace so far did wind up in Europe. Now, I don't know about that building. And there may have been others involved that were not in Europe. But what we've tracked so far, they're Europe.
Really?
And, but we'll track it down to the street address.
You get them, Kevin.
I do.
You're the guy. But you also talked about something that was very interesting to me. You briefly mentioned spiritual technology.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming what you mean by that. What did you mean by that?
I mean that we need a better understanding of what technology is. Technology is not just stuff that we make. It is, I got a couple of minutes here before break, so let me put it this way.
Mm-hmm.
If I said there is this thing that has moving parts, and all these moving parts are very coordinated, and nothing happens out of order, and nothing happens by accident. Most people are going to envision a machine that has been very precisely built.
Like cogs in a wheel.
Yeah. But what I'm actually talking about right at this moment is the cosmos.
Yeah.
It is as much a technology as a machine that we build. Okay? It may be more so because it built us. And so by learning as much as we can about how this cosmos works, and learning as much as we can about what is behind this cosmos, then we at that point are immersing ourselves in the technology of the cosmos. Now, some people would call that spiritual. Some people would call that mystical. Some people would call it balderdash.
I would call it going home.
Yeah, there is, for instance, you talked about the Bible earlier. Well, we're 30 seconds from break, so I'm going to tell you something that's in the Bible that says that.
Okay.
And it shocks people sometimes when they find out what's really there, because they go, well, I believe the Bible. And they don't even read it, you know.
Right.
I don't go to church, but I read it and I know what it says. And so I'm gonna shock some people. And it's good shock, though. It's not bad shock. It's not negative at all. So folks,
wait, come on, get them thinking. Yeah,
you'll understand it right off. All right, here we go.
Tonight, we're going to be talking with Kevin. Kevin, are you on screen yet?
I'm not on screen, but I am on audio. So go ahead and I'll put me on screen.
Okay. Kevin, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Well, thanks.
Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, and I keep it a secret.
Okay, good enough.
Well, let me tell you, my location is somewhere in the United States.
Well, that works.
Okay.
I'm up here in Canada, just so you know, everyone, Kevin has not morphed into a fat Canadian. I'm actually hosting the show tonight, so not to worry. Kevin will be back another night. But tonight's topic I'd like to talk about. I'd like to get to know a little bit about Kevin, about his life, about his ambitions, about his vision, and just how he got into doing all this kind of stuff. Now, I guess I've known Kevin for a couple of years now. And I remember him once saying to me that he was very interested in studying investigating crimes that have to do with the occult. And I'm wondering if he's ever done that. Kevin, have you ever investigated a crime that has occult significance?
Yeah, well, yes and no. Yeah, you know, I was a deputy sheriff in Louisiana, and Louisiana has a whole bunch of occult stuff.
Oh.
And so at certain crime scenes, there would be various occult-looking things, you know, and sometimes very occult-looking. And so I thought, well, you know, it would be very helpful if I knew something about this stuff so that I could read that crime scene.
Right.
And know if there was some significance to why this crime had been committed.
Now, are you speaking about something that would have to do with voodoo and
sometimes,
Louisiana?
Sometimes just Satanism. But the, you know, the biggest one that I busted was a group that was vandalizing churches way out in rural areas.
Oh,
and
really?
they were stealing, you know, microphones and PA systems and anything else of value. And then they would leave all these occult markings, you know, like a pentagram with a circle around it and things like that. And they would always paint three names somewhere on some wall. It was Cochise, Broken Arrow, and Geronimo.
Really?
Yeah. And
that's very interesting.
Yeah, and so you know, I would look at the I had studied this quite a bit, and I was looking at the markings and the candles and colors of candles that they used and so forth.
Right.
And it looked to me like it was all homespun. It didn't look like it was any actual occult stuff. In other words, I came to the conclusion that it was all left there at the scene just to give it the appearance that this was some occult group.
To make a scary impression.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a very long story. I won't get into it, but when I finally busted them, what it was three young people playing Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, dear.
And they were role-playing, and this was their thing that they were doing in role-playing. And they lived in a trailer house that was absolutely stuffed to overflowing with things they had stolen from all these churches. You know, for an investigator, it's helpful if you can read that and know if it's real. You know, if you don't know, if you can't read it, then you go off saying, oh, it's some cult doing this. You're diverted in looking down paths that don't matter.
Have you ever come across a crime scene that has true, like not made up by kids being vandals, but true occult symbols on it? Or
yeah.
No?
Yeah.
You have?
Mm-hmm. But nothing spectacular, something pretty horrific. It was a sacrifice of some cats.
Oh, how awful.
And it is awful. It would have been awful. It would have been much more awful had that been a human.
Yeah.
And, you know, I heard stories about that all the time. There are rumors about that all the time. And I never found any evidence of that. But, yeah, a sacrifice of some cats and the markings were satanic. They actually were real.
Oh my gosh, up in Vancouver, in quite a few neighborhoods, there seems to be a rash once in a while of finding half cats.
Mm-hmm.
Cats that are cut in half, and there's all this speculation that it's a satanic thing or an occult thing. Have you ever run into that?
I arrested a high priest of Satan once. I arrested him for drunk driving. And when we got to the jail, he said, "Do you know who I am?" And I said, "Yeah, I know who you are." And he said, "Do you know what I can do to you?" I said, "Not a damn thing, or you already would have done it."
Good for you, Kevin. Now, is this how you got into interest in study in religion behind? Because I know you're extremely well-educated, and you've studied the Bible, and we've mm-hmm. even spoken before about how the military may have almost weaponized the Bible. And what are your thoughts on that?
I think the churches have weaponized it.
Oh.
Really. And not all of them, but, a great majority of them have. How did I get started? Well, I was raised by a couple of folks that were very, very religious. My mom and dad, but they were not fanatics.
Mm-hmm.
It was something that for them was very, very real. It wasn't put on. It wasn't something that you just do. I mean, they actually are very steeped in their beliefs, you know.
They lived it, yeah.
Yeah, they did. And my mom's still alive, and she still lives it, you know. And I have no problem with that. But I was raised in church, you know, and I've said, I don't know if I've said it on this show, but in radio interviews that I've done relative to my music, I've been asked about some of this, and I've said, you know, I'm not one of those people that says, "Well, they made me go to church when I was a kid, and I'm never going again. I hate it." I'm not like that at all. I don't resent it at all. I actually enjoyed it. Had a lot of good friends there. Mm-hmm. But I was raised in both my family and the church. They always taught us, don't believe it just because we say it. Read it for yourself and come to your own conclusions. And I did, and there was a time where I was really steeped in that as well. But the more I read, the more I knew. And the more I knew, the less I bought the story, the party line that the churches have.
Right. I think largely the church is about control of population is what they let out to the general people, and the real scriptures behind things are kind of kept quite hidden.
Even
is there any part of the Bible you find still to be true that hasn't been gotten rid of by the powers that be, so to speak?
Well, see, every denomination is a group of people gathered around which part of the Bible they don't believe. Okay, and so if you lump them all together, then they've all gotten rid of all of the Bible. I don't have any problem with the Bible. It's an amazing book. However, you can't trust what they tell you it means. That's the problem.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm not stupid. I can read.
Yeah.
And, you know, it means what I read.
Right.
It means what it says. The problem is, it says stuff they find very uncomfortable,
and then they put their spin on it.
That's it. And so, you know, I'm not anti-church for everybody else, and I don't attack churches and try to tear them down and try to put them out of business. They do a lot of good things,
mm-hmm.
but you know, for me. If I know that a lemon is a lemon and you try to tell me it's an apple, we got a problem.
Right.
And these are not things I believe. These are things I know because I can read.
Right. Right. Just one quick question, Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
What did your daddy do?
Well, first, he was a musician.
Really?
Yeah.
What kind of musician?
Gospel.
And, oh, there you go.
And his father was his father wrote some gospel songs that were published. And my dad went to school to get a master's degree in music, religious music. But what he really enjoyed doing was working with his hands. He's a very, very smart man. and a deep thinker. But he enjoyed working with his hands, and he finally settled on being a auto mechanic, a diesel mechanic. He went to school for that and became a master mechanic.
Do you know, Kevin, it's always been my experience that people that are on a spiritual quest are always becoming one thing or another. They never just stick to one kind of work or one kind of self-definition. They're always changing. They're always evolving. Sounds to me like your father was doing exactly that, too.
He was, and I'll tell you, my dad was my best friend on this planet. I'm very fortunate. You know, I had friends growing up that absolutely hated their parents, and I mean, they were always at war. My dad was my best friend. When I was a little kid, you know, my first memories of somebody reading something to me is my dad reading from the encyclopedia. He would read from the encyclopedia to us as we were going to bed. That was our bedtime stories.
I like this guy.
Oh, he's great. And he would ask philosophical questions. And even, I think we would say, mystical questions. And ask us to talk about it and think about it. He'd discuss it with us. I'm talking, you know, 3, 4, 5 years old we were doing this.
Wow. Do you have any of his music recorded? Maybe you could play some on the show some night.
No, I don't. I know he was in a gospel group that they did make a record, but I never heard it. Mm. So, I don't know.
Well, it sounds like you have a very interesting background, a very interesting childhood.
Yeah. Well, and you know, he also was responsible for me taking piano lessons and getting into music starting when I was 6.
I have this image of you as 6 years old in front of a piano now.
I couldn't even touch the pedals. You know, a piano has 3 pedals. You know, I couldn't even touch those pedals.
Was the piano your first love? Or I know you play guitar now.
Yeah, I never liked piano. Mm. I can still play it. And, you know, when I sit down and play, I enjoy if people enjoy it. You know. But for me to sit down and play piano, I never liked it. And me and the piano were not best of friends, no.
You express yourself better with a guitar, I would bet.
Yeah, I can express myself better with just about anything. For me, piano, I play it pretty well, too. But for me, it feels like work.
Right. Right. Now, when you were traveling around being a police officer, you were arresting some very violent people, weren't you?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, you know, even when I was a deputy sheriff, the very worst fight I ever had in my life, the only one I ever had that I thought I may not be coming home alive from this one, I was a deputy sheriff. And it was a little bitty guy, and he was on PCP.
Oh, dear.
You can hit him in the head with a sledgehammer. They don't feel it. And yeah. I mean, you can kill them, and they don't know it. And they'll still fight. And it was tough. So, yeah, I've dealt with a lot of violent people.
Wow, that must have been scary.
No.
No, you just get used to it?
Well, you're just, when you're in one of those fights, you're just too busy to be scared.
Oh, yeah. Well, I would trust you to be in one of those fights to protect me anytime. You're the guy, Kevin.
Well, I kind of felt like, I heard Jerry Clower say this one time, the comedian. He said it was his uncle that was fighting a bobcat up in a tree. And he yelled down to Jerry, "Shoot up in here amongst us. One of us has got to have some relief." That's kind of how I felt in that fight.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Have you ever discharged your weapon?
At a person, no.
Oh, right.
No.
Good.
I've had a lot of situations where it would have been a justified kill.
Really?
Yeah. But you know, even after you cross that line where it's a justified shoot and a justified kill legally, you very often, not all the time now, but very often you have just a couple of seconds for things to turn. Mm-hmm. You know, you can give it another couple of seconds here. And in one of these fights, in one of these situations, 2 seconds feels like 2 minutes.
And so,
you know, I mean, I have pulled it, and in language I can't use on the radio, explain to them the finer points of choosing to live. And they chose to live and drop their weapon, you know. But, yeah, I've had situations where I've pulled the gun and had the pressure on the trigger. But, I've never had to kill somebody. Never had to shoot somebody.
Good, you're lucky. I can't imagine. Do you know, we don't have guns up here in Canada, where we have very few of them, and I traveled with my spouse down to New York State once. They're from New York State, and their family took me out into the woods and showed me how to shoot a gun.
Uh-huh.
And it was this, what's it called, a Ruger? .22 Ruger.
Uh-huh.
And I held it up and I shot it, and I immediately started crying. I know it's terrible to admit, but I wasn't prepared for the shock of it.
Yeah. Well, you should have tried a 12 gauge. It would have put you on the ground.
Oh, I can't imagine.
Yeah, shoulder cannon.
Wow. Very interesting. Very interesting. Kevin, I also remember you spoke a while back about that you don't dream.
No, I don't dream.
Did you ever once?
Oh, I used to have dreams every night. And fantastic dreams, yeah. You know what? A break just took over.
Oh.
So I'll come back to dreams when we come back, all right?
Before the break, Kevin was telling us a little bit about something that he wanted to tell us about from the Bible. Kevin?
Yeah, I was talking about this idea that there is some person or presence or intelligence, some people say consciousness, that's running the cosmos, from which the cosmos emanates. Now, some people call that God. Well, look, in your Bible, see, I've gotten some emails, Lasha. I guess you can imagine over the years I've gotten a number.
Oh, man.
But I've gotten emails where I talk about consciousness, the consciousness. And they'll say, well, you know, you just don't understand. What you're calling the consciousness is God. Well, if that's what you refer to this as, okay, fine. But your Bible refers to this as the consciousness as well. Both. And it's in John chapter 1, verse 1. And in Greek, that verse says, in arche en halagos, kai halagos en proston theon. That's the first part of that verse. Well, it's translated thus into English. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Now, let me just ask you, does that make any sense at all without you having to do mental convolutions? It doesn't. And the reason it doesn't is because in arche, that means it's translated in the beginning. It simply means in ancients, unnumbered ancients. In ancients, in arche, en halagos. So, in ancients was the logos, and that's not the Greek word for word.
No,
the Greek word for word is rhema. Okay, so why did they translate it word? I have no idea why they did it, but let me tell you what logos is. If you go read, it's Greek. Okay, it was just written. It's written in Koine Greek. That's just common street Greek. Okay, this is not any kind of like special Greek from God here. It's just street right. Greek. Okay, of the time. Okay, so you go read what the Greek philosophers were talking about when they used the word logos. It is consciousness. In the beginning, in the ancients, was consciousness. The consciousness was with God because the consciousness is God. So it identifies, you know, you want to know who is God. God is the consciousness behind the cosmos.
Yes.
Okay. So what he's trying to do is explain to people what you're calling God is the consciousness behind the cosmos. And so there's nothing new age in talking about consciousness, unless, I don't know, unless talking right straight out of the Bible is new age. There's nothing new age about it. There is a consciousness, and I am one of the consciousness nerve endings.
Yes.
And so are you, and so is everybody else. We don't have consciousness. We are consciousness. We're a nerve ending of the consciousness.
And we manifest just like that.
Yeah.
As our consciousness dictates.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of the belief, too, that physical reality kind of falls into existence like rain, because that's what completes the cycle of consciousness. We need the physical to sort of drive us forward, to sort of, it's like a like gasoline in a car, like an engine. But a great deal more of what's going on in life is unseen. You know, the physical world is a very, very tiny, small segment of what's going on out there.
Mm-hmm.
And until we realize that, you know, we're going to be thinking it's just space out there, that the cosmos is something just to look up at and see. It's not. It's an inner landscape, and it created us. You're absolutely right, Kevin.
Well, now, there are people that would say, well, now, C. Smith, you say you don't have any beliefs, but that's a belief right there. No, it's an experience.
Well, if you didn't have a belief, you wouldn't exist, because consciousness...
I don't know. I don't believe. I either know or I don't know. And things
right.
that I experience, I know. And, you know, I know that we have abilities beyond the humans, because I know we're not human.
This is very interesting. When we were speaking about spiritual technologies,
mm-hmm.
about what we can create with our minds and what we can create with, do you know, it reminded me of a story that when I was, I knew a fair amount of tantric Tibetan lamas, and one of them was very old at the time. He's since died, but he was very old at the time. And he remembered things during the Second World War, and he remembered that the Nazis came over to Tibet. And they took, invited some very highly realized tantric lamas and monks to go back to Germany with them. This is very unknown. It's not something that's written in history books. They took them back to Germany, and when these monks and lamas discovered, they thought they were guests, they were actually prisoners, when they discovered that they were really being studied and they wanted to take their abilities from them or understand them, all the monks and lamas killed themselves. They would not allow that to go into those hands. And I think this might have been a time when spiritual technology began to be weaponized, because it very much, it believe me, it's very possible to do very amazing things with the mind. And if the military gets a hold of that, or people that want to have power over you get a hold of that, you know, they're going to try and manipulate it.
Well, and they have, and they've been doing it for a very long time. Devices that can intercept brain waves and or interfere with brain waves have been outlawed by the European Union, based on testimony from Nick, starts with a B, and I can't think of his
name. Begich.
Begich, that's it. Based on testimony from Nick Begich before the European Union.
Right.
But they are not outlawed here in terms of, you know, the military's got them.
They just got everything, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Except me.
Good. Stay independent, Kevin. We need you.
I'm not anti-military either.
No, I'm not.
But I am very, very pro freedom, and you know, I live free, and I'm gonna live free till I don't.
Right. You have to. You have mm-hmm. to. That's another thing why I think your show and other shows like it are so very important, because, do you know, I've worked in the media, as in the newsprint media, for much of my life. I'm a columnist, and I write horoscopes and this kind of stuff. I've also worked as a journalist, and, you know, they have no soul, those people. You wouldn't believe the arrogance, the corruption. The only kind of voice, I think, that when the human beings speak to each other are shows like this. I kind of think of this show as like, you know, America's Kitchen Table, where you can get together and just exchange ideas, and you can really hear what people think about and talk about. I think it's very, very important.
When people will have the courage to pick up their phones and call.
Ah. That's what we're going to be doing in the second hour, and mm-hmm. I would really encourage everybody to do so. This is your opportunity to speak with Kevin, to ask him any question you want, to ask me any question you want, to talk about spiritual technology, to talk about invisibility cloaks. You know, have your dialing fingers in the upright position and get ready to dial your phone.
People sometimes think I'm scolding when I'm urging people to call, and I'm not. You know, it's just that I have watched the herd mentality all my life.
Yeah.
And it starts with somebody else will call.
Yeah.
Somebody else will ask this question. And folks, that isn't the way the cosmos works. It came through your mind for a purpose.
Yeah.
It's your question. It's your comment. It came to your mind from the cosmos for a reason. It didn't come to somebody else. It came to you.
And you're watching this show for a reason.
Yeah. And see, when you ask a question, there's maybe 100 other people or more that are going, oh, yeah, what about that? And so, you know, if you don't ask that question, then information those people needed to get, they don't get. And it's not scolding. It's just urging you to break out of the herd mentality and be free. And just
speak. Just drawing a circle and inviting someone in.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just the kitchen table. Come on and have a coffee.
There you go. But I'll tell you something, Lasha. People call in with questions sometimes. It's like, you know, a whole new horizon opens for me because... And I get excited about it because, oh, yeah, I haven't even thought about that angle, you know. And it's very, very exciting. But we're in this together, but the only way it'll work is for us to be together.
Back to the Kevin Smith Show. For those just joining us now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're having a great time talking to Kevin. And for your information, my name is Lasha Senyuk, and I am... being the host tonight and asking Kevin a lot of questions. If you missed the first half of this show, my sincerest hopes, dreams, and wishes that you never, ever suffer that indignity again. Now then, Kevin.
Yes?
How does it feel to be on the reverse side of this?
It's fine. The first time I ever did something like this where I was being interviewed, I was nervous, even though I sat at a mic every night. But, you know, I've been interviewed now a number of times on other shows. And so I'm not nervous about it anymore, and this is nice.
Good. Good. Feels comfortable for me, too.
Good.
You know, I was nervous when I first started, but it feels really quite natural and good. Now, I would encourage everybody out there to phone in, and I also wanted to encourage everybody to join the Kevin Smith Show's members area, and I know that that area isn't necessarily working the best that it should right now, in the sense that it might be difficult to establish your membership or buy your membership or what have you, but you keep trying, folks. You just keep trying, because it's very important that these shows stay on the air. This is our outlet, folks. This is where we can talk about these things. And do you know, last night Kevin was talking about that some people want to get out of this genre. And I think, what fools. You know, they say people are not interested in this kind of topic anymore. And I say, oh, come on. People have been interested in this topic for 100,000 years.
Well, you know? It's not that they're saying that people are not interested in it.
Uh-huh.
It's that people who are interested in it are not interested in supporting it at the moment. And
that's
just
they're broke.
Well, in a lot of cases, that's true. And in a lot of cases, it's not. You know, by the way, we have a caller. So we'll go to that call in just a second. But there are many, many people who could afford a dollar or $5. And what happens is they say, well, that won't make that much difference. Believe me, there are months when a dollar makes a difference in whether we can pay the rent or not. And, you know, and it's not just us. It's filmmakers in our genre. It's people who organize and produce conferences in our genre. You know, I know a conference that is famous, and lots and lots of people go to this conference every year, or they always did. And then all of a sudden, that conference was $36,000 in the hole, leaving the guy that's the organizer in really sad shape.
Yeah.
And why? Well, because people are just sort of like, okay. And, you know, and maybe that's, I mean, I'm not blaming people. I'm just giving you the observations and what we see happening, and that's what's happening. And so lots of conferences are going away. Lots of authors are getting out of it in this genre. Filmmakers getting out of it and so forth.
Well, there's a new era coming, I think. I think there's a new definition of what's coming. I think people are more at ease with all of this stuff, do you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's maybe going to change into something better or different or more. But it's also true that this is the opportunity for us to create our own media, for us to create our own conferences, mm-hmm. to talk about the things we want to talk about, rather than have it be, you know, just crammed down your throat by the media. So mm-hmm. I think it's very, very important. You know, and you know what? A smile don't pay the rent.
That's right.
You know,
no matter how spiritual somebody is, they still have to spend money at the grocery store just like everybody else.
Right.
Yeah. You want to take this call?
Absolutely. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling from?
Lasha, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent. You're my first call ever.
Yeah, well, maybe. But I have a comment, and then I have a question for Kevin.
Sure.
It has been said that time runs in cycles. Events run in cycles. The interest in the paranormal, in my opinion, will come back. But what we do with it between now and then, how we grow and evolve, is up to us as to how we take it. That's my comment.
Okay, what's your question?
Kevin, what you got interest in the paranormal for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
What would be your ultimate goal to have something paranormal occur in your life?
I've had many paranormal things occur in my life already. And you know, if I start talking about those things, then I have a certain number of the audience are going to say, "Oh, I don't believe that." Well, I don't actually
Kevin.
Give a rat's ass because I'm
Kevin,
not asking you.
We believe
you.
It. Talk it will.
You know, but you know, Brent, I don't actually give a rat's ass if anybody believes me. I'm not asking them to believe me. You know, but I've had many paranormal things happen in my life. But what would be the ultimate? I have no idea how to answer that. I think every one of them is just cool.
Did you see anything strange that was out of the ordinary at any time?
You know, I when I had the stroke and I left my body, I was absolutely totally conscious and in another place.
Tell me about that place.
It was just a white room. It was circular. And it was all white. The walls were white. The floors were white. And I didn't see God. I didn't see a tunnel. But I was just seated on the floor, and I had my knees pulled up and my arms wrapped around my knees, and I was sitting there just kind of looking around, and I said, I know I'm going to die someday, but not today. I'm too damn busy. And just like that, I was back in the ER. I was back on the table, just like that.
Really?
That's paranormal, yeah.
All right, let's go on that one. What was your emotional, what were you feeling? I'm going to go with emotional. What were you feeling when you were in that room?
Excellent question.
Yeah, it is. And I was feeling exactly what it sounded like when I made that statement. It's like, okay, look, yeah, I understand. This is all about dying. Well, I'm too damn busy.
Okay.
And that's just all I felt.
Just,
you know, it's
kind of irritated what was going on.
I think certain emotions are kind of removed when we're dying, because some people would be panicking.
Yeah, I guess. But you know, Lasha, and I've told this story, and Brent, you've heard this. And Lasha, you may have heard it. When I was in East Timor, I was on my motorcycle, and I was on a mountain road, and there's a cliff, and I don't know, 100, 200 feet straight down, and then real jagged, sharp boulders at the edge of a river. I went around the curve on my side of the road, another guy on a motorcycle on his side, on my side of the road. He was on my side. He came around the curve, and he had a pregnant woman seated on the back of his motorcycle, so I decided to buy it. And instead of forcing him to make a sudden move and maybe, you know. So I scooted to his lane so he could go past me in mine. And then he scooted to mine and T-boned me, hit me right in the side, popped me right over the cliff. And as I was going backwards over the cliff, the only emotion was, well, this is it.
What happened to them?
Nothing. They didn't even wreck. And you know, but it and my bike was still up on the cliff. If it had gone over with me, I would have been done. It stayed. I mean, it was up on the road. But the reason I didn't die is about 30 feet down, there were some shrubs growing out of the side of the cliff, and they had vines in them. And I didn't care if it was poison ivy. It caught me.
That's like out of a movie, you know?
Actually happened. And at that point, I was the police chief in that area. And one of my guys was in a patrol car coming behind me. He saw it all happen. And he was from, let's see, where was he from? Ghana. And he's very religious. And I, when the vines caught me, they closed around me so you couldn't see me from up top. And he's looking down, and through the leaves, I could see him up there, and he was saying, "Commander, Commander, oh Lord Jesus, Commander, Commander," like this. And I yelled at him, and I said, "Hey, I'm okay, man. Why don't you get me a rope?" "Oh, praise God, praise God." I said, "Praise him later. Get me a rope now."
See, that's the kind of thing that if you saw it in a movie, I mean, it's fact is stranger than fiction.
Yeah.
You know, you have to tone fact reality down for people to believe it as fiction.
Yeah.
It's true.
Well,
Brent, do you have another question?
I'm just going to make another real quick statement. It's kind of a characterization of Kevin that he may or may not agree with. He's just kind of matter of fact.
Yeah. Brent, if you ever meet me in person, there will be zero difference between what you see on this show and meeting me in person. It's just the same. Really.
All right.
All right.
All right, I'll let you guys go.
Thanks.
Kevin Smith, he's the real deal. Thanks, Brent. Well, that was really interesting. You know, it reminded me of something that I heard or read about, I think, in a book on dying. That about 6 weeks before people actually die, they get a visitation from someone that they know that's dead, but it seems completely natural to them. they don't see anything unusual or weird about it. It's just, there's that person, hello, how you doing?
Uh-huh.
Talk to you in a few weeks, we'll see you. And they don't see it as different from reality. It's quite a common experience.
Well, yeah, I guess it was not my time to go then, because I didn't have any visitations like that.
No, you went too quick, Kevin.
I do most things.
Like a bunny.
I do most things pretty quick.
Yeah.
We have another caller.
Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Rasha, this is Steve from Georgia.
Hello, Steve.
Hey, hey. Listen, I have a question for both of you. Speaking of books, you learn a lot about a person by the books they're reading. Kevin, are you currently reading a book? If so, what are you reading?
No, I am not. I am not currently reading a book, Steve. I have been so tied up with writing new music, and you know, I still have the shows to prepare for. So when I do a show, it's 2 hours at night, right? But I do 8 hours of preparation for that show. Okay, so...
That's a lot of work.
Yeah, but I enjoy it. And so mainly, Steve, what I read would be relative to preparing for a show right now, because I don't have the extra time to read a book right now, because I've been so busy writing music.
Rasha, your turn. What are you reading?
Well, I'm one of those weird people that actually read several books at once. And recently I've been reading Dispelling Wetigo, which is a fascinating book about the nature of evil and how it becomes evolved into the world and how it becomes evolved into your personhood and your spirituality. That's one book I've been reading. I've also been reading a book, I can't remember the title of it, but it's about some of the magnetic grids of the Earth. Mm-hmm. And what else have I been reading? Well, that's all I'm reading right now.
Well, I'm like you, Lasha. I'm a chain reader. I generally have two or three books going all at the same time, too. One other question for Kevin. Kevin, have you seen the lyrics yet that I sent you?
I haven't, because Steve, and this is, I'm not making excuses, but let me tell you exactly why. The computer that got hit didn't just get hit yesterday. Yesterday it got bumped off. It was getting hit from the day I did that show about the sun and the huge coronal mass ejection from the sun. You know, from that day. We were getting hit, and I began having cascading failures. Wow. One of the failures was I could not open email. And I was trying to work through that, and then more things went wrong, and then yesterday they just bumped it off.
Really?
And so I rebuilt everything, but it took me until about 2:30 this afternoon, about 2:30 this afternoon, I got it finished. And as you said,
is your email working again?
Well, I suspect that it is, so I will take a look at it after the show.
Well, if it is, I can always resend it. I wrote them down and I've got them saved, so okay. You know, I can always resend it.
Okay, very good. And I'll tell you something, if you're going to be up after the show, call me on Skype and let's chat a bit.
Okay.
All right.
Can do.
All right. Thanks.
All right.
Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, somebody else can call us and they need to ask you stuff like, what are you reading? You know, I've read tons and tons of books. At one time, my own personal library, I had like 21,000 books in my own personal library.
Oh my.
That I had read all of them and all different kinds of subjects. Over the years, you know, I don't know. I don't hang on to books.
Yeah.
I pass them on to other people. You know, I read them. Now, you know, let somebody else. And I realized I was hoarding all this information. And so I started giving all my books away. And I gave them all away, But when I read, let me explain this. When I read, I like to read something that is well-researched history. And by that I mean it's not somebody's nationalistic opinions of stuff, but they document what they're saying. I like well-researched history on anything or on anybody. I like books of philosophy where the philosopher speaks at common language levels. I got a vast vocabulary. I can understand if they're using technical terms. I don't like that because they're not really trying to accomplish anything with people when they're speaking over their heads.
Yeah.
And it insults me for them to speak in a way that only people who have had my background can understand it.
It's one thing about, because I'm a writer, I've been trained as a writer, and I was originally trained as a poet, and one thing I've learned about writing is the first thing you hear is the pen scratching. The first thing you hear is the people's ego when they've written something. It has to come from the heart. It has to be about your experience. It has to be about something that means something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm the same way. I like to read things that are well-researched. I like to read about mysticism. I read a great deal about astrology, cosmology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I read books from, you know, medieval times, and I read books from modern times. It's what speaks to me in the moment. And it goes in waves. You know, sometimes I read a lot, sometimes I don't.
Well, I read a lot. You know, I read every day. It's just that what I'm reading today is actually relative to tomorrow's show. Okay? So I do 8 hours of research and reading and getting familiar with the topic I'm going to be doing tomorrow. You know,
right.
And that way I'm not totally ignorant of the topic when the guest says something. I know something about it, you know, and I'm at least conversant with it.
You have to prepare yourself, of course. Yeah, you can't just go into it kind of cold-like.
Well, I've been forced to do that before. And I can get through a show that way, but I don't prefer those kind of shows. And by force, like at the very last minute, your guest says, "Man, I'm sick and I just can't do it." And you've got like 10 minutes till airtime, so you pick up the phone and, you know, every host has a list of people that have said, "You ever get stuck, give me a call, I'll do it."
Right.
And so I call one of these pinch hitters, you know, and they're good people and they're good guests. But sometimes they're talking about something that I didn't have time to prepare for. So, you know, right. And it's tough.
Right. Yeah, you must have some real horror stories about being on air and people clamming up on you or people saying things that are unexpected. Or
let me tell you, the very first interview I ever did was not on the Kevin Smith Show. The very first interview that I ever did, I had been asked to do a talk show on a small, little local station over there in Louisiana.
Really?
And it was called Expressway. Your own Expressway. Express it your way. You know? And so I got this guy that was an author who had written a book, and it was all about finding the keys to unlocking all of your potential. So I'm thinking, this guy's going to be good. I read his book. It was a good book. This guy's going to be good. And it was like, well, tell us a little bit about your book. Now, he didn't do this, but it was almost this bad. Tell us a little bit about your book. I wrote it. I mean, it was almost that bad. And, I mean, Lord. That was the very first interview I ever did.
Oh, my gosh.
Mm.
Yeah. A bad dress rehearsal means a good show, Kevin.
Well,
it's interesting. I'm trying to publish my own book. You inspired me because you said, you know, get the software and do the ebook. So I went out and I got it, and I'm getting ready to do it. On my website, I had, for a couple of years, I wrote a column called Field Notes, which was about my experience of mysticism, of traveling through the cosmos, of spiritual study, of opening the third eye and understanding things and visions from a different point of view. I won't get into the details of it, but it's very involved, and it was a long involved diary kind of journal entries, and I've put them all together. I'm going to publish them on my website, so it'll be my first book published on the website.
Well, congratulations. So,
pardon me?
Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's
I've got it all edited, and now I'm just getting ready to put it up there, and we'll see how it goes.
Well, you know, writing a book is both fun and tedious. The closer you get to the end of it, the more tedious it becomes. You know, because you think, oh, I left that detail out. I got to go back and rewrite that paragraph somewhere, you know. And it just gets tedious getting it all right. And then you turn it loose, and even if people like it, you'll go back and read it later, and you'll say, oh, man, why did I say that way? I should have said it this way, you know.
I know. It's like a little freeze frame snapshot of, of who you were at that time.
Yeah.
It's kind of strange. But, writing a book nowadays, and the publishing industry has totally changed now, too.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's doing e-books. You know, thank God, because it's the same deal. You know, in order to get published in a real sense, in the sense of, you know, McClellan Stewart or, you know, one of these big publishing houses, it's like you have to win the lottery. I mean, you just don't have a chance to do it. Now people can do it on their own, and I think it's great. And, you know, Kevin, I have another question for you that I was thinking of.
Okay.
I know that you've been because you've your studies, your scholastic studies, you're very good at research. I also know that you do a tremendous amount of research for each show. And also, I get the feeling that you're a real gumshoe about going after pictures about Mars. And I really wanted to know, after looking at all that research, all those things, pictures you've looked at about Mars, what do you think's really going on there?
Well,
big question, I know.
I think that there is hard evidence. By hard evidence, I mean we have photographic evidence from NASA themselves, from these rovers, that there is life on Mars. And I've shown what happens when you strip their red filter out and you see green stuff growing.
Yeah,
and you
incredible.
See water, you know, flowing in a creek bed. And they hide that with the red filter. So what's really going on Mars is it's not Earth-like.
No.
But it's a great deal more Earth-like than they want us to think. And there is life there. Now, are there bases with humans there? We hear those stories. I have not seen hard evidence of that. Are there buildings on Mars? Abso-freaking-lutely there are buildings on Mars.
And they seem very ancient, though, don't they?
Well, they could be. We don't know. Now, if you go to certain places in the world right now, certain places, for instance, in Iraq, a new house is being built with mud brick or being built with stone.
True.
And so a picture of it from the air would look pretty much like a picture of a 600-year-old house sitting next to it. Which, by the way, I have a friend in Kathmandu who lives in a 640-year-old house. Okay.
Cool.
Yeah. But it's hard to tell from the pictures if they are ancient. They could be. They could be current, or they could be ancient and currently occupied. But there are buildings there. And so I'm not sure exactly what's going on Mars, but I'm sure it's big, whatever it is, because they don't want you to know it.
I think so, too. It seems to me that there's life on Mars, but it's very, very stressed. It's under unusual circumstances, and it's like some cataclysm happened.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, the life has really had to struggle and reinvent itself in different ways. Some of the pictures you've had on your show are just astonishing, Kevin.
Well, they're astonishing to me when when I discover them. Yeah, I think there's life on Mars, and I think that large populations of every type of life on Mars has been stressed, and I think, has been severely reduced.
Yes.
By whatever cataclysms, and I don't think it's just one. I think it's probably a series of cataclysms that have caused the problems. I think the life that is there has adapted by this time and doesn't feel stressed and is rebuilding its populations.
Its ecosystems and mm-hmm. its... Sure. That would make sense.
Yeah.
If there's been life on it before, there'll be life on it again because you can't kill all the microbes. And
well,
it just reinvent itself, do you know?
Yeah, that's true. And, the thing is that it's important.
Oh.
It's important. If people are plugged into politics, it's important for you to grasp the idea you are being severely lied to by people you are paying. If you're not plugged into politics, and I'm not, I expect them to lie. My opinion is you're paying them to lie. That's why you hired them, because you knew
you're
they were liars.
If you don't think that they're,
you knew they were liars when you hired them.
Yeah,
you know
that's their job.
So that's my view of the political situation with this, and it there is some politics with this because that's where the secrecy comes from. And I don't know exactly what's going on Mars, but I know it's big. It's important, and the fact is, there is life on every planet in our solar system. That doesn't
Absolutely.
Mean that there's people like us walking around, but there's life on every planet. And it's ridiculous for us to think that life has to live, that only life that can live in our little narrow band of our little ecosystem on this planet. See, we can't even live on most of this planet. And most of this planet's
yeah.
water.
If and you landed in the Sahara Desert, you'd think the whole world was sand.
Yeah, not for long, though. You wouldn't last too long.
True, true.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting, Kevin. There's something to research. Once I typed into Google, mineral rights to the moon.
Uh-huh.
And you'd be surprised... Who owns the moon?
Oh, what I know.
Companies and how they've divided it up.
No, I'll tell you something. There are three men who own the mineral rights to every heavenly body in our solar system.
And this is frightening.
Well, one of these men is Dr. Joe Resnick. And Dr. Resnick has been on the show a number of times. And he and two of his partners, their names escape me, filed for, and it was never disputed by the UN. They filed public notice that they were claiming the mineral rights. And by every little jot and tittle of international law, they own the mineral rights on every planet and
oh
every heavenly body.
That's so sick. It's just sick and twisted. You can't own the sky. You can't own a planet. You can't...
It's a loophole.
I get so amazed at how arrogant and materialistic the world has become. It's so different from what human beings really are.
Are you sure?
It's so far away from what we really are.
Well, I wouldn't know. I'm not a human, so I don't know.
You're not human.
No.
What are you?
We are the descendants of the race that made this place. In some texts, they go by one name, and in some texts, they go by another. Now, in Genesis, they go by the name Elohim. And Genesis, as well as even Jesus himself, specifically stated that that's our race. There were humans here, but they're gone. And we got a whole population of people all over this planet who think they are human, and they are living down to that expectation.
You're absolutely right. It's a cycle, and we have de-evolved. We're at the lowest point of it. Mm. I believe there was a time, in fact, I know there was a time when there were much larger people on the Earth. And Kevin, they were magnificent. They had skills and abilities and talents that we couldn't even dream of. And this is who we really are in our natural state. We have devolved down from that. And the way it happens, it's a cycle. And when the sun changes, we change. Mm-hmm. That's what I think went on.
We have
I won't
a caller.
Get into it because it's very complicated, but it's a fascinating thing. And to think that someone could own the physicality of something is beyond me.
We have a caller on hold.
Oh, caller, your first name and from where are you calling from?
Oh, this is John from Arizona. How you doing, Sasha?
Very well, John. How are you this evening?
Oh, just getting along in this heat. We actually had a break today. We got down into the 80s for a high.
You're breaking up a little bit there.
Yeah, John, your phone for some reason is breaking up a little bit. I can understand you, though. Go ahead.
Okay.
I speak Arizonan.
John, do you have a question for Kevin?
This world, who have laid claim to all of the assets in the rest of the universe, they're going to find it real difficult to deal with superior beings who occupy that space before we got there.
I agree with you. I think they will also find it extremely difficult to deal with governments who don't even recognize their own constitutions anymore.
Yeah, you know, it's like a bunch of 6-year-olds playing in the street, finding out that the cop is really the one in charge of that territory.
Yeah. So, you know, to me it's a moot point. Look, you can't eat gold.
No.
And, you know, I was given a gift by the three guys that own all these mineral rights. I own the mineral. They just gave it to me and sent it to me, a certificate showing that I own the mineral rights for about a 2-square-mile claim there on Mars.
But really?
You know, yeah. So,
and Kevin, we've got to name it.
No, because I mean, explain.
No, you're
to me,
right. You're right.
How am I ever going to go get gold off of Mars and bring it here? I mean, and see, gold on Mars has no meaning. I'm not there. I can't get it. I can't bring it here. And you
unless you can
it.
Sell it to somebody here who thinks he's going to be able to go and get it.
If they can go get it, they can jump the claim, and I can't do anything about it.
If they can,
right?
Go
it's kind of like buying the Golden Gate Bridge, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I mean, I appreciate that gift, and you know, but the fact is, it's never going to do anything for me because,
right?
You know, and even look, if you handed me $1 million, John, you've met me. If you handed me $1 million, do you think that would change anything about me?
Well, and I don't, and I think that many of us who are comfortable in our existence, like you are, and I think I am, would not really change. We might get a little bigger house, but go out and spend things on a lot of expensive cars and stuff like that. No, because I really don't give a damn what the rest of the world thinks of me, because what's important is what I think of me.
I tell you what, I would, I'll be honest, if I had $1 million, there are some things I would buy. I'd get me a new pair of Nikes. And a new air mattress.
You're sleeping on an air mattress.
Oh, yeah. I used to sleep on the floor.
Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, I had a thought. I had a thought earlier. I don't know how close we're getting to break or anything, but let's call you were talking about the Bible earlier and and all, being part of all of this. All of us are just part of this bigger entity. Let's say that they're, you know, for the lack of a better term, let's call them the forces of darkness and the forces of light. And a lot of what we get from churches and the Bible, even the Bible, because it was translated by the forces of what I call dark, keeps us from realizing the power we have in our bodies to heal ourselves and to remain young and to learn and progress.
That's right.
And they want us to stay that way because then we die off quicker and they get our assets.
They mistake everything spiritual for something material. Do you know this idea of gold? You know, they talk a lot about, you know, aliens came here to mine gold and this kind of stuff. Well, you know, to the unconscious and to the mystic, gold represents safety. It's a color. It's a vibration. That's really what is they're after, is that kind of gold. It's the philosopher's stone, turning, you know, lead into gold, is to turning something very, very base into something spiritual. That's what it's really about. This idea that it's actually about a rock that's yellow is a lie. Always has been.
All right. On that note, we have to take a break. John, thanks for the call.
Thanks, John. Great call. We have a caller online. Caller, your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Gary in Nebraska.
Hello, Gary.
Listen, I'm really enjoying this evening's program. It's we're fortunate to be able to get the insights that we are, and I really thank you and Kevin for providing those for us. I wanted to reference something about last night's show that was messy, and it wasn't Kevin's fault. It was so bad. I was thinking about this, and I thought, Kevin doesn't get enough credit for how he handles these situations. To me, it's like wearing a bathing suit in a blizzard. There's no place to hide, and it's an understatement to say it's uncomfortable. And yet, with great grace, Kevin managed it all and held things together. And I think that's pretty terrific, and I want to say thanks a lot for that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Kevin did do very well, didn't he? And he made us feel confident. That's what I
thought. Yes. And I just hope it doesn't end until Kevin wants it to end. I'll subscribe for that.
Well, Gary, I thank you. And it won't end till I'm ready for it to end.
Well, again, thank you very much. And please continue.
Good night.
Thanks, Gary. Yeah, last night's show was quite a cakewalk, wasn't it? You know, there was a caller on last night's show from Ireland that had real trouble. I think he was on Skype.
Yeah, I could understand part of what he was saying, and it wasn't his accent, because he's called before, and I understand everything he says. He's got a perfectly clear accent. And I don't. I speak Texan, you know. But anyway.
I speak astrologies.
Yeah. So anyway, it was just that we were being interfered with so much. And it was breaking up and I couldn't understand. But he wanted to know about the... he sent me a message here. And he wanted to know what he was asking was about the stem cell beef burger that the British grew in a lab, and he said they ate it today in the West End of London at an event, and he wanted to know what my thoughts were on that. Look,
wow.
Your mind, your soul, your spirit becomes what you think. Whatever you think about, what you feed it, you become that. If you feed it hate and fear, you become hateful and fearful. Your body is physical, and what you feed it, it becomes. You feed it artificial, genetically modified stuff, and it's not made of that, it's not designed to run on that, and it's not going to work for very long. Now, can you fill your stomach with it? Yeah, hell, you can fill your stomach with rocks. But is that going to be good for you? It is my opinion that when you modify the genetics of food and then put it into your body, when you do that, you're modifying your genetics eventually. And it's not healthy, in my opinion. And,
absolutely. And do you know, Kevin, too, why would we trust the governments? I mean, I sound so paranoid, but why would we trust other people to do this for us? It would be so easy to throw anything in this genetically modified stuff and have it affect people.
I have eaten stuff most people turn their noses up at because of the places I've lived. You know, I talk about eating bat. It's not bad. Tastes kind of like rat. I've had that too. And people turn their noses up at it. But then they will eat genetically modified corn because it tastes and looks like corn. Well, you give me an organically grown bat, and I'll take that over GMO corn any day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would too. I would too, without question. You know, it was interesting. I was once talking to a tantric Tibetan Lama once, and he knew I was an astrologer, and he said to me, "So you really want to know the future? You tell people's futures. You want to know the future?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "If you want to know your future, look at the people around you. That's what you will become." The mind is very sensitive. It's the same thing with the body. What you feed it, it becomes.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and I'm not saying this as a joke. I usually do. But I'm 18. Now, there's a calendar that says I'm lying. But I'm not. You know, I stay young by thinking young and not pretending I'm young. Look, I know I'm 60, okay? But I am 18 because I think young. There's not... If you said, "Kevin, we got to do this, and we don't have anybody that can do it. Do you know how to do it?" "No. But I will do it." Okay? Now, how can I say that? Because if I must, I can. The cosmos does not deliver to you a must that's outside of your ability to do it.
No.
And so if a must gets delivered, you have to be young enough to realize, then I can. No, but wait a minute, you're 60. And, of course, my very unpolite response to that is, "And who gives a rat's ass?"
Right.
You know, that's a number on some calendar hanging on somebody's wall. It has no bearing on whether I can do and whether I can achieve. And so it's how you think. It's what you think about that determines the ride you're going to take.
I always like to say, this is as old as I've ever been.
Yeah.
Sort of covers it.
Yeah.
Do you know? It's not about a number. It's about what you've experienced and who you are.
Well, and, you know, what I just said, I actually live it. And, you know, that the cosmos does not deliver me a must unless I have the ability to do it. I may not know I have that ability, and it may be a must I don't want to do. But if I must,
this is the joy of finding out, isn't it?
It's like a great roller coaster ride.
Oh!
And if you look at life that way, you never have an unsuccessful day. I never have an unsuccessful day. Never.
Right. The negative experiences are just as enlightening as the positive ones. Mm-hmm. They really are.
Well, you know, if you wake up in the morning, you won. Everything else is incidental.
That's true.
Therefore, I wake up a winner. It's up to me to decide if I go to bed a loser. And I decide not to. And, you know, every single person wakes up as a winner. And if you make 1/2 inch of progress during the day, that's a success.
Yes. Yes.
Most people want the ultimate goal to happen today, whatever their ultimate goal is, and they feel like a failure if they didn't get it. Hey, you made 1/2 inch towards it. That's success.
But and so much of the enjoyment of life is the journey, is the process.
Yeah.
You know, when you get to the end, you're just, you know, breaking a ribbon at a finish line. It's not about that. It's about what you've accomplished and the journey you've taken, do you know?
It's the fun of the race, isn't it?
It certainly is.
Yeah.
It certainly is.
Well, listen, Lasha, very quickly, I know you're hosting, but let me do this for you. Tell people your website.
Oh, yes. I run a website called www.mysticstars.net. and I'm an astrologer, and I write weekly and one daily column on there. I'm also getting ready to expand my website, I think. I'm starting
you got about
to put
10 seconds.
Podcasts.
How many broadcasts?
Podcasts.
Podcasts.
I put two on so far, and I'm working on my my third one, which is going to be about astrology and all things cosmological, which is really interesting. We talked about that this evening.
Yeah.
But, yeah, please do visit my website and shoot me out an email and tell me what you think.
Lasha, we have hit the end of the show. Thank you for being with me, and stay on the line for just a moment. It's been fun, ladies and gentlemen, and didn't Lasha do a great job as an interviewer? Thank you for being here. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You may call me whatever you wish to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time.